Welcome to another edition of Hanging Out with Ted Bouquet, and today is a day I have long awaited. I have the man, the blues man, the man with the guitar, six string in his hand, Tommy Katona.
How's it going, Ted?
It's going, man, it's so good to hear you. And, you know, we've been talking about this interview when we were out at the South Fork show.
Yeah, I'm honored to be here, you know, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
No, thank you. But here's what I want to do. I want to get right to it, man. You know, I was sitting there and I like to do, you know, background, you know, a bio of a person I'm talking to. Man, I got to reading all the different things about, you know, where you started and how you got influenced and all this stuff. I've got two pages of notes right here in front of me that I can talk about.
Yeah, cool.
We got a lot of stuff, but I know you got a gig tonight, so we ain't going to sit there and talk. You know, I want to make sure.
I've got plenty of time.
Thank you so much for being so gracious. Now, really, here's something I didn't know. I didn't know you came from Hungary.
Yes, I did. Back in 2007, on Stevie Ray Vaughan's birthday, actually. Yeah, and I didn't mean to. I was looking for flights, and they gave me a flight for, you know, on that day.
It's your destiny. Cool. Your destiny.
I thought so too.
You didn't plan that?
No. I mean, I planned on, you know, coming here in October or, you know, fall of 2007. I was back in Hungary, and it was October the 3rd, 2007.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now,
it was a calling.
Now, your dad does he still play?
He doesn't really play much anymore. He's kind of retired, and, you know, he doesn't really have a band right now, and, you know, he watches Facebook, and he's following me all the time, you know, looking for the live streams and all kinds of, and any kind of content, you know, with us playing. So that makes him very happy, which is great, you know. But every once in a while, if I get a chance to get, you know, go home, we usually play a little bit together.
Your dad just had a birthday, as you said, last month, right?
Yeah. He had a birthday on the 31st, which is one day after his hero's birthday, Eric Clapton.
So Clapton is his guy?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Big time.
And I see you really, really, really started at an early age, like 4, when you picked up a guitar?
No, it was more like 7.
Okay.
Yeah. And by the time I hit 9, I started playing with my dad and his band. And we actually started getting some really, really nice success, you know, national success over there. You know, back in the 90s, that's when Europe and especially, you know, my country, Hungary, we used to have blues festivals and events and venues all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lot of bands, and we had some great bands over there around that time. And that's when, you know, I was growing up, and I, you know, I saw a lot of people, and I got to play with some more, you know, famous Hungarian musicians over there. It was a good time. You know, it really was a great era in the 90s for blues music.
So I see that you, well, it's pretty easy to tell, you know, you're a blues guy, that you like Albert King, B.B. King, Freddie King. We get all the Kings out of the way real quick.
Yep, and Albert Collins, one of my childhood heroes.
Really? You never hear about Albert very much. You hear about Albert King, but never Albert Collins. Albert Collins was a bad dude, man.
I know. Albert, he was one of the most unique blues guitarists who ever lived. And one of the greatest, you know.
Why was he so unique? I mean, was it the way he played? Because I know his playing, you look at him play, it wasn't...
Well, his playing style and his whole charisma, you know. Mm-hmm. He was just a fun guy to watch.
Mm-hmm.
His whole stage presence, the interaction with the crowd, and of course his signature ice pick sound, you know, very, very bright, very spanky, very loud. He was the master of the Telecaster.
You call him the master of the Telecaster?
No, everybody called him the master of the Telecaster.
Oh.
That was his, you know, the master of the Telecaster. And that's how they introduced him a lot at shows.
Now, did you ever, have you really studied Freddie? Because Freddie King was really, really big up here in the North Texas area, you know. I mean, Freddie.
Oh, I know it.
Freddie tore it up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Freddie is a legend, just like, you know, the other Kings. And I was fortunate enough to play with Freddie's daughter one time, Wanda.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was wonderful.
You know, you have played with a lot of spokesmen. Tell me about this Mick Taylor thing.
We opened up for him, yes, in Hungary back in, I want to say 97, if I remember right.
Mm-hmm.
I was like 13 years old, right? And that was and again, you know, back in the 90s, we had blues festivals all over the place, you know, in my hometown. But this was actually in Budapest, this international rhythm and blues festival.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mick Taylor was the headliner. So I got to meet him in the green room, and he signed me something back there. And he just looked kind of he looked kind of grumpy, but that's just the way he looked, I guess. but then he got up on stage and blew my mind. Like, it was crazy.
I also hear you've been on stage with Big Bill Morganfield.
Yeah. Yeah, that was an interesting situation because I was not really part of the show at all.
Mm-hmm.
But somebody, a musician friend who played there, and that was, again, it's the same venue where I saw Mick Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same venue, but many years later. It was like almost a decade later.
Mm-hmm.
When Big Bill played there. Big Bill, if anybody doesn't know, one of the sons of Muddy Waters.
Yes.
So yeah, and he's a big guy. He is a big dude. He's huge. He's huge, and I think he works out a lot.
he's not fat big. He's
No. He's tall and he's buffed out. He's swole.
Swole.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and somebody, a musician friend of mine who played there, he actually mentioned that I was there, and somehow they pulled me up on stage for a song. So that's how I got to play with him.
What did you play?
You know, I don't really remember. It was some sort of blues.
Okay.
I just jumped in. Friend of mine who was part of the show, he handed me his guitar, and then I just picked it up and jumped in.
And then you come over in 2006 and then came back to Texas in 2007?
Yes. Yeah, the first time I came here, 2006. Yeah, that was only for about 3 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a visit.
Tell me about Full Blast.
Full Blast was my band in Hungary. We made an album together. And really what happened was that I picked some of my favorite musicians, rhythm section over there, who I've known for, you know, a long time, since I was little.
Mm-hmm.
I was maybe 10 years old when we played together for the first time in Hungary. And then many, many years later, when I made my album in Hungary, that's when, you know, I called them to be my rhythm section.
Mm-hmm.
So after the session, the studio session was over, we decided to stay together, and we started playing shows. So that's how we got to Finland. We played at the Puisto Blues Festival in Finland back in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And we also played in Italy at another blues festival. And we were playing before Cyril Neville of the Neville Brothers.
That's R&B royalty right there, man. You talk about the Neville Brothers. Those are the dudes.
Oh, I know. I love the Neville Brothers for a long time.
So what?
And I got to meet Cyril. You know, that was a plus.
Was it just Cyril and his band, or did he have Aaron and, you know?
It was just Cyril Neville as a solo, but... You know, they did the whole New Orleans thing. They were dressed up, and they had a bunch of feathers and purple and green and, you know, all the New Orleans stuff. It was awesome.
So you've been around some rock and roll royalty, my friend.
I know. I know. I feel very blessed. Oh, yeah, and in Finland, we played right before Johnny Winter.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds like that part of the world is really, really rocking on blues, man.
Oh, absolutely. We have a lot of bands, and I don't know, the whole appreciation for blues as a genre is different over there. I guess it's more special over there.
Mm-hmm.
So every time when they invite a band from the U.S., it's super special for the crowd over there.
Mm-hmm. So I guess it's like back in the 60s when Zeppelin and Clapton and all those guys were listening to the B.B. King and Robert
Absolutely.
Johnson and, you know, all those guys, Muddy Waters, they were listening to them going like, what is this? What is this? What is this they're playing? And over here in America, it was just kind of like it was just ju-junk music. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, look at Jimi Hendrix. Jimi had to go to London to become famous.
Yeah, that story in itself is amazing.
Mm-hmm. Stevie Ray Vaughan had to be in Montreux at the Montreux Jazz Festival to meet some important people that launched his career, basically, with David Bowie.
That's right, because he played on Let's Dance.
That's right.
Yeah, that was the guitar solo in the middle and at the end. Uh-huh, Let's Dance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people don't even know.
Well, Stevie Ray Vaughan was far above and beyond. He was probably 25 years ahead of his time, for sure.
Yeah, just like Jimi Hendrix. You know, Jimi did something back then that nobody else would do.
There's a story. When Jimi was in London, you know, of course, he was around Cream and, you know, Clapton and The Who and, and all these different bands. You know, they were all coming, the Rolling Stones. They were all saying, like, hey, man, we're going down to the club tonight. And it's like, oh, okay. It's this new guy from America, man. His name is Jimi Hendrix, and he's just awesome. And, you know, so they would run down there. And so Clapton was just like, I love this guy. I love this guy. You know, he was doing stuff that nobody had ever thought of. And so I read that Clapton called the Fender Company, the Fender Guitar Company, had a custom-made left-hand guitar Strat for Jimi. But Jimi died before Eric could give it to him.
That's right. That's true. I heard about that. I don't know what exactly happened or where Eric got that guitar from, but I know that he had a Strat, a lefty Strat that he was going to give it to Jimi the last night. But he didn't show up.
Wow.
They were supposed to meet somewhere.
So you see, you got all that royalty and stuff. And speaking of Jimi Hendrix, you got Forever Hendrix, right? You don't only do Stevie Ray. You're into another project with Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we have a full set of Jimi's music. We're not trying to sound exactly like Jimi Hendrix, and of course not even try to look like him or anything like that. That would be silly. But I'm all about the music, and we just really enjoy to play his material in sort of our style.
What is the hardest song that you had to learn from Jimi Hendrix to sit down and listen to it? Of course, you went to music school, for years, and you can also read and, of course you can read and write, but music,
Me?
Yeah.
No.
You, whoa. I read that. That was wrong.
I went to music school for 4 years, and I learned some, but I just did not care for reading and writing at all. So that's why I quit. Plus, I had to take piano, and I was not really that interested. And after 4 years, I just quit because I wanted to play guitar my way.
You learn all these tunes by ear?
Everything by ear.
Oh, come on. Tommy, come on, man. Come on.
Nah, honest to God.
Really?
Well, growing up with musicians and growing up with my dad's band, playing and learning by ear, you know, that helped me a lot to develop my ability to hear and just translate to the instrument.
So all these Stevie Ray Vaughan songs that you play, Crossfire, Voodoo Child, you know, Couldn't Stand the Weather, Texas Flood, you know, the tune, you learned them by ear?
I did.
Wow.
There was a lot of rewind and play and rewind and play. When back then I had cassette tapes and I had VHS.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had to do the same things with the tapes, just rewind and listen to it again or watch it again, whatever I had. You know, back then I only had maybe one or two videos from Stevie that I could watch. The Live at the Elmo combo, that's a classic. Then later on, I got the Austin City Limits. And then, you know, much later, I started to receive some other, like, bootleg videos. First on VHS tape and then DVDs. And then, you know, finally we got to the era of YouTube where, you know, I could just go on the internet and type in Stevie Ray Vaughan, whatever show, and, you know, I could find whatever I wanted. Well, back then it was not even that many things, but now, you know, if you go on YouTube, it's full. Like, everything is up there.
Sure.
So the youngsters today, they are very lucky that they have full access to everything, so they can just look it up and all they need to do is just learn,
you know,
sit down and play.
You know, I play bass.
Yeah.
I was sitting playing an old Motown tune about 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm a night owl like you. I mean, I may not go to bed until 4 o'clock in the morning. But I was sitting up playing an old Motown tune, and, you know, I figured, you know, I had it about 85% done. You know, I'm like, oh, you know, I'm trying to pat myself on the back because I play by ear, too, and I'm just like, okay, I got it. And I'm sitting there, and I'm listening, and there's this big open E that I never, ever heard that totally accented the chorus of the song. The song is called Stone Love by the Supremes, and they got Jamerson, of course, the Funk Brothers doing it. There's an open E in there that I never heard because it was buried in the mix. And, man, I just sat there. It took me 30 minutes. It's like, I cannot believe I have played this song over and over and over again, and I missed that note. And then I kept listening. There was another E, and there was another E. And it's like, oh, I felt, you know. So I've learned, don't ever pat yourself on the back. If you can read or you can't read, you know, I mean, you know, when you start thinking like, oh, I'm really good. No.
You always keep on learning, you know, and me too. You know, I never stop. And it happens to me every once in a while when I, you know, listen to Stevie or any kind of music that I've been playing for years. And sometimes I find something new. Maybe I heard it a million times, but I can still spot something new, something different. Just realize that, you know, oh, crap, you know, I've been doing this note wrong.
Exactly.
That's not what was there.
Exactly. Sometimes it's a ghost note or you know, some kind of intonation or syncopation. You start talking about doing that, and you hear that, it's like, what? Wait, why did I not hear that?
Exactly. Nuances, details. And I'm extremely anal about that. Since, you know, I've become a teacher, too. Since I started teaching and I'm, you know, having to break a lot of things down to the last note, that's when I start think about the music. I don't just hear and, you know, like the way I used to learn everything just by ear, just listening.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think about it. I have to think about the notes, which is, it's kind of weird because I already know a lot of that stuff, but sometimes I feel like I become a little bit smarter because I think about it, and then if there's something wrong, now I can fix it, now that I think about it, if it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. It's
great.
But it's frustrating when you sit there and, you know, if you play, I mean, you play Crossfire who knows how many times, and then if there's a a ghost note or something in there, or just a little, you know, a little something in there. Maybe there's a space where the note was played throughout the whole song, and then that note is missing. And, you know, you look like, oh.
Well, we've been playing Crossfire for a long time, so I guess it's okay.
Oh, yeah, it's good. It's more than okay.
I hope so. Just trying to play as accurate as possible.
Yes.
Just because I don't like to hear when it's wrong. So I'm all about playing all these songs as accurate as possible.
I've told people before, everybody really usually in North Texas, you know, they know who Texas Flood is. If they're on the stage, it's going to be a good night. You're going to hear some really good music. You're going to, you know, it's going to be tight, and it's going to be the way it's supposed to be, you know, the way a band is supposed to play, you know, right on time. And I've told people, I said, if you go in and you sit there or whatever and you close your eyes and you just kind of think 1981, it's like listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan's band. By the way, I found out that you played with Tommy Shannon at the Granada.
Yeah, I did. That was a magical 3 minutes. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Did he call you up on stage, or did you just, was it planned?
Again, I was not part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
I just went to see. It was some sort of benefit concert. I really just don't remember what that was for. But I knew somebody, one of the promoters or sponsors, and he was the one who made it happen for me. Because he was the one who said, yeah, Tommy Shannon is going to show up and he's going to probably close down the night. Sure enough, you know, he played with Smoking Joe Kubek and I think that was George Raines, Jimmy Vaughn's drummer, who played drums that night. And that was the really the very end of the night. It was after midnight. And the whole event was going on all day, like started at noon, something like that. And there was different bands and musicians playing. And I was there for the majority of the day. You know, this guy, the one of the sponsors, he promised me that I could get up on stage and play with Tommy. But he said, just one song, only one song. I don't care, but, you know, I just want to be up there and share the stage with him.
What was the song?
So, yeah. It was just a shuffle and A, I believe. Nobody was singing, just a shuffle. Oh. And I got up there with Tommy next to him, and we smiled at each other, and we just played for about a good 3-4 minutes, maybe.
So that was magic.
Yeah, so I got to play with Tommy and Smoking Joe Kubek at the same time, which was an honor, you know.
Yes, yes. Has Jimmy ever seen your show?
I don't believe so, no. He and I know each other for, you know, years now.
Mm-hmm.
But we never really developed a relationship. We saw each other, you know, a few times.
Mm-hmm.
There was one time, I want to say 4 years ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, when he was here in Dallas. He played at the Wildflower Festival. And John Mayall and the Bluesbreakers, he opened. And then Jimmy Vaughn was the headliner that night. Fortunately, I'm friends with some of Jimmy and Stevie's cousins.
Really?
So, uh-huh. And they were so nice that they actually put in the word for Jimmy that I would be there with my band, actually, because Steve and Travis came too. We all, and my wife, we all invaded Jimmy's tour bus. So we went back and obviously we got invited to get up on his tour bus. And he was 30 minutes before showtime. I would think that most of the musicians who are about to go on stage, they don't really want to be bothered.
Yes.
Like right before the show, right?
That's true.
But Jimmy was just so nice and friendly, and we went up on his tour bus and we hung out, sat down next to each other, and he pulled up his phone and he showed me some old recordings that he played with the Chessmen with Dole Bramhall.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was just super nice. And, you know, we took pictures and everything, and we were chatting for a while. And he told me that he had a ranch down like south from Austin. And he said he's got horses and llamas and an alpaca. So he was just talking about, he was just super cool, you know. And he signed one of my guitars, my old Telecaster. That was pretty nice. And I did not say a word to him about Stevie because I was there for him, you know. And I know that it's a hard thing. And I know that there's probably a million people,
yes,
who tried to talk to him about Stevie.
Yes.
And, yeah, so I was not trying to be one of them. I was there for him. And out of respect, you know, I just I never said a word.
I first, a buddy of mine, Paul Andrews, he's, of course, you know, he's, mm-hmm, he's in the Blues Man tribute band. Yeah. And he was saying, hey, man, you know, I got a chance to get some tickets. You want to go see Jimmy Vaughn? Yeah, okay. So we go down, you know, we park, of course, you know, at the House of Blues. Parking is a premium there. I mean, if you get a parking space, it's great. If you don't, you're going to have to walk a long way to get to it. So we pull up, and he got a parking space, and there's Jimmy's bus. And he said, hey, man, look, there's Jimmy's bus, man. And I'm like, oh, okay. We never got a chance to talk to him, obviously, because there were people, you know, hanging around, and security, you know, was like really, really, especially after the Pantera incident, you know, I mean, security is just like quadrupled, you know. It used to be people would wander in and wander out, but no, these people were like, no, can't let you go down this hall, guys. Jimmy's dressing room is down around the corner. Can't let you go in. So, you know, that didn't bother me. But the thing that was really so cool, the place was sold out. It was packed. And so Jimmy comes out playing this white Strat, you know, and he's, you know, talking with the audience and playing some stuff, you know, playing his stuff. And he seemed like he was a really, really nice guy. And I talked to Paul the other day, as a matter of fact. He said that Jimmy had drove his Bluesmobile.
I know that he signed it. I saw that.
And I think he wants to get with you guys, I think, you know, and do a show. Man, that if you guys ever pull that together, if it ever happens, be sure to let me know, because I want to see that.
Absolutely. And actually, I meant to tell you something. Well, two things about the Bluesmobile. You know, we have a CD that we made about 5 years ago, which was pretty much like Stevie Ray Vaughan covers.
Yeah.
Texas Flood Live in Studio, which is actually available on Spotify because we don't have any physical copies left. On the CD cover, there was a picture of us, you know, standing on top of the Bluesmobile.
I saw that. You on the trunk, standing there playing your guitar. I saw that.
That's right. Uh-huh. And one time we played, I remember we played at Rock 101 in Little Elm, and Paul showed up with the Bluesmobile, and that was my birthday. And then he let me drive the Bluesmobile. So we were cruising in the parking lot. And Steve was on the microphone, you know, the big speaker on top of the Bluesmobile. Mm-hmm. He was on the microphone saying, you know, tonight only at Rock 101, Texas Flood, 9 p.m., free parking. You know.
Have you ever been anywhere with him in that car?
With
Paul? You ever been out on the highway with him in the Bluesmobile?
Not on the highway, no. Uh-uh.
As a matter of fact, we were coming to the benefit. It was a benefit. You remember when we were down at the House of Blues and they had the charity event for the five police officers who got shot here?
Yeah, we played that show, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's where I first met you. And so we're coming down Central, you know, on our way to downtown Dallas. And, you know, so you're driving down Central and people are passing by and they're pulling up and they're looking and they're waving and they're taking pictures and they're smiling.
Yeah,
and I said, man, I said, I feel kind of weird because normally when you go down the highway, you just drive, you know, trying to be safe and get where you're going. The traffic had slowed down and we were kind of boxed in. And he said, look, and I looked over to the left, people were waving and smiling. And I looked in the front, people were waving. And I looked to the right and somebody was taking a picture. I said, what's going on, man? He said, this car, man, wherever I go in this car, I said, people want to take pictures with it and everything. So if you guys get together and do a show, please let me know so I can come to see that. That would be fantastic.
I think that Paul is planning on doing something in October or November.
I'm there.
Like doing a show together.
I'm there.
Yeah, you better be. He said he's gonna bring the Bluesmobile and everything, and he's planning on doing a big show, and we're gonna be playing, and he mentioned something that we should play a couple of songs with their rhythm or horn section. That'll be cool. We're playing every week, every weekend, and last year, even after the pandemic, we averaged like 150, 60 shows. We have a lot of shows coming up, especially the summer. It's going to be packed.
Well, we can't do this interview and not just have one part. We got to do part two. So there is a bonus episode of Hanging Out with Ted McKay we're going to do later on this week. And we're going to get more into the blues and what inspired Tommy and all the great things that a great player has to go through to get to where he is. That's coming up on part two of the interview with Tommy Katona on Hanging Out with Ted McKay.